The halogen hum of the parking garage usually feels like a safety blanket. But tonight, the flickering yellow light over my Corolla felt like a spotlight I hadn't asked for. The humidity of the valley was settling into the concrete, thick enough to taste, and my keys were already digging into my palm when the heavy steel door of the stairwell groaned open. It was Marcus. It was always Marcus lately. He didn't walk toward his Range Rover. He walked toward me, the soles of his Italian loafers clicking with a rhythmic, predatory precision that made the hair on my arms stand up. "You're still here," he said. And it wasn't a question, it was an observation of my desperation. I tried to laugh it off, leaning against my car door to hide the fact that my knees were shaking from 10 hours of staring at spreadsheets that didn't add up. We both knew the department was hemorrhaging staff and I was the only one left holding the tourniquet. He stopped just inches away, close enough for me to smell the expensive peat of the scotch he kept in his bottom drawer and the cold metallic scent of the rain starting to fall outside. "You're the hardest worker I have, Elena. And it's time we talked about that senior analyst title," he whispered, his voice dropping into that low, conspiratorial register he used when he wanted you to feel like the only person in the world. He talked about the percentage. A number so high it felt like a hallucination. A number that would finally let me stop checking my bank balance before I bought groceries. But as he spoke, his hand didn't stay by his side. It found the roof of my car, then slid down to my shoulder, his thumb grazing the bare skin of my neck with a lingering, heavy pressure that felt like a brand. "The offer isn't just about the work," he murmured, his eyes locking onto mine with a terrifying calm clarity. "It's about the loyalty, the kind of loyalty that happens after the lights go out." I felt the air leave my lungs in a sharp, jagged burst. The silence between us stretched, filled only by the distant sound of a siren on the interstate and the wet slap of raindrops hitting the pavement. My brain was a frantic calculator, weighing the student loans and the past due utility bills against the suffocating weight of his palm. I pulled back, the movement sharp and ungraceful, my shoulder hitting the side mirror with a dull thud. "I can't do that, Marcus," I said, my voice cracking once before I forced it into a cold, professional line. "I've earned that raise on merit alone." The transformation was instantaneous. The warmth vanished from his face, replaced by a mask of corporate indifference, so chilling, it felt like the temperature in the garage had dropped 20 degrees. He didn't yell, he didn't even look angry. He just pulled his hand back, tucked it into his pocket, and nodded slowly as if he were suddenly bored with the conversation. "Merit is a subjective term, Elena," he said, his voice flat and clinical. "I'd hate for you to realize too late that you've overvalued your position here." He turned on his heel without another word, leaving me shivering in the yellow light, the ghost of his touch feeling like a layer of oil I couldn't scrub off. Monday morning didn't bring a memo about a promotion. It brought a notification from the automated scheduling system at 6 a.m. My hours had been slashed. 38 hours a week. The bare minimum for benefits had been gutted down to 14. It was a surgical strike, delivered via a no-reply email address while I was still pouring my first cup of coffee. When I walked into the office, the air felt different, charged with the kind of static that precedes a lightning strike. People weren't looking at me, Sarah from accounting, who usually traded weekend stories with me over the Keurig, suddenly found a very interesting document to study the moment I walked by. I went straight to Marcus's glass-walled office, my heart hammering against my ribs like a trapped bird. He didn't even look up from his monitor when I slammed my laptop onto his desk. "My hours are gone, Marcus." "What is this?" I demanded, my voice echoing in the quiet suite. He finally looked up, his expression one of mild, patronizing confusion. "Budget reallocations, Elena," he said, leaning back in his leather chair and tenting his fingers. "We're lean-loading the Q3 projections. And since you've expressed such a desire for a strictly merit-based relationship, I had to look at the efficiency of your billable hours. It turns out, we can get the same output from a junior freelancer at half the cost." The lie was so bold, so transparently punitive, that I felt a surge of nausea. "I did the work of three people last month and you know it," I snapped, But he just smiled, a thin, cruel line that didn't reach his eyes. "You should be careful about your tone," he cautioned, his voice smooth as silk. "It would be a shame if your final 2 weeks were marked by unprofessional outbursts." I realized then that there was no HR safety net, no internal grievance process that would save me. The HR director played golf with Marcus every Sunday. They were two sides of the same counterfeit coin. I retreated to my cubicle, the walls feeling like they were closing in, the fluorescent lights suddenly too bright, making my head throb with a dull rhythmic ache. Every time a Slack notification popped up, I flinched. Every time the elevator chimed, I looked for security guards coming to escort me out. I was being starved out, pruned like a dead branch from a tree I had helped plant. The week became a slow-motion car crash. I spent my newly empty afternoons in my apartment, the blinds drawn, scrolling through job boards that looked like a desert of low-paying entry-level roles. The panic was a physical presence now, a knot in my stomach that made eating impossible. By Thursday, the power company sent a final notice. I sat on my floor in the dark, the blue light of my phone illuminating the tears I refused to let fall. He was winning. He was showing me exactly what my no was worth in his economy. I went back in on Friday, my pride a tattered flag, intending to ask for a meeting, to see if there was any bridge left unburned, any way to crawl back into his good graces without losing my soul. But as I approached his office, I saw the door was cracked open. I heard a voice. It wasn't Marcus's. It was Chloe, the new intern, barely 22, her voice high and breathless. "I don't understand the ledger entry, Marcus," she was saying. He responded with that same low conspiratorial hum. I recognized with a jolt of pure electricity. "Don't worry about the numbers, Chloe," he said. And I could hear the smile in his voice, the predatory warmth returning. "Come over here. Let's talk about your future with the firm." I stood frozen in the hallway, my hand hovering near the doorframe. Through the sliver of glass, I saw his hand move, mirroring the exact trajectory it had taken on my car 3 nights ago. It landed on her shoulder, his thumb beginning that same heavy, rhythmic stroke. Chloe didn't pull away. She froze, her eyes wide and panicked, looking directly through the gap in the door at me. She looked like a deer in the headlights, terrified and small, paralyzed by the same calculation I had made in the parking lot. I didn't knock. I didn't burst in. I turned and walked toward the server room. My vision tunneling, my badge still worked. The IT manager was at lunch, his half-eaten sandwich sitting next to a stack of hard drives. I knew the admin password. I had helped set it up during the last audit when Marcus was too busy to handle the technical minutiae. I didn't think about the legalities, the non-disclosures, or the prison sentences. I only thought about the weight of his hand on my neck and the look in Chloe's eyes. My fingers flew across the mechanical keyboard, the clicks sounding like gunfire in the small, chilled room. I bypassed the encrypted layer, diving deep into the private folders Marcus thought were invisible. There they were. Folders labeled by year, then by name. My name was there. Sarah's name was there. Names of women who had left the company abruptly over the last 5 years. Women I had never met, but whose ghosts still haunted the break room. Inside were photos. Surveillance shots from the parking garage. Screenshots of private messages. And a digital ledger that tracked more than just expenses. It tracked incentives. The data was massive, a sprawling map of a decade of systematic, quiet predation funded by the company's own discretionary bonus pool. I felt a cold, sharp clarity wash over me, the panic finally replaced by a hard, jagged edge of resolve. I wasn't just going to leave. I was going to burn the house down while he was still inside. I plugged in a thumb drive, the little blue light blinking rapidly as it swallowed his secrets. 10%, 50%, 90%. Just as the bar hit the end, the heavy door to the server room swung open. It wasn't the IT manager. It was Marcus. He stood in the doorway, the light from the hallway casting his shadow long and distorted across the floor. He didn't look angry. He looked disappointed. like a father catching a child with a hand in the cookie jar. I told you that you overvalued your position, Elena, he said, stepping into the room and closing the door behind him with a soft final click. I hope you realize that once you step through that digital door, there's no way back to the parking lot. He held out his hand, palm up, waiting for the drive. The server fans roared in the silence, a mechanical scream that matched the one building in my throat. I looked at the drive, then at him, realizing the exit wasn't behind me anymore, it was through him.